Welcome to the Bitcoin Playbook, where we discuss proven strategies for using Bitcoin in your business. This week, we have another roundup episode with John Gordon and Trey Sellers. We talk about Elon's New America Party, the big, beautiful bill, and how you can now use Bitcoin to help you buy a house. Here are John and Trey. Gentlemen, welcome to another roundup episode. This week, we got news that Elon Musk is starting a new party called the America Party, and he seems like he's interested in Bitcoin. We'll see about whether or not he follows through with that. He's called Fiat Hopeless when people have been asking him about, you know, what role Bitcoin will play in this new party. But let's have a little conversation to start off the podcast about Elon Musk, the America Party, and the role that Bitcoin can and maybe what you think it will play in the future when it comes to political conversations.
Well, I don't trust Elon at all when it comes to anything related to Bitcoin. I guess he has earned some stripes in that he hasn't sold all of the Bitcoin that he had bought for Tesla. And it sounded like they actually acquired a little bit more at some point in the past. And maybe he has changed his mind, but it does seem like he's got something to say about literally everything under the sun, except for Bitcoin. So make of that what you will. I don't understand it at all. It plays perfectly into the narrative that he's kind of trying to construct around America's need for fiscal austerity and transparency and, you know, just changing the way that the old guard has run things for so many decades. And you would think that if you are challenging the two-party duopoly, the two-party system, then you probably need to embrace something that challenges the underpinnings or the underflow of what funds those two-party system and really embrace the culture that Bitcoin brings, which is one that kind of carves its own path. And he's really going to have to carve his own path because going against the two-party system is nearly impossible. I mean, it's codified essentially that there's no way to really make too much headway or progress. The Libertarian Party has been trying for years and years and years to no avail. And I think we're going to see the same type of result coming from the America Party that we saw coming from the efforts of Doge, which was just hitting an absolute brick wall and a buzzsaw. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being very cynical here, but I just don't see anything lasting coming out of this. But at least it'll provide some fun things for us to talk about on a weekly basis.
Sure. John, are you any more optimistic or do you feel similarly?
Yeah, I think having more voices and potential of a third party is definitely better than the two-party system we have now. But I agree with Trey that it remains to be seen how successful that can really be. But given Elon's arsenal of businesses and X and being able to be really dominate a lot of the narrative, I think if anyone's going to be able to pull it off, it might be him. And I think from a Bitcoin perspective, it's interesting to see that, you know, despite potential now challenges between the America Party and the Republican Party, you have two parties that have embraced Bitcoin or potentially will embrace Bitcoin. As Elon said, fiat is hopeless. We'll see to the degree it's actually integrated in it. And I think a lot of Democrats coming around to and realizing that they need to also be more open to Bitcoin if they want to turn things around in the next midterm elections, and that Bitcoiners continue to be a bigger and bigger, have a bigger seat at the table and in our vocal political advocacy group. As we saw, I was out in DC a couple weeks ago for the Bitcoin Policy Institute Summit, over 1,000 Bitcoiners advocating and talking about Bitcoin in business and as it relates to regulation, educating regulators and their policymakers from their states. So that type of grassroots movement, as you see with a whole host of different issues, Bitcoin matters, the way it's regulated matters. And so we'll see if, you know, Tesla was accepting Bitcoin directly for payment a few years ago. They turned that off and said they turn it back on if we saw more renewable mining. Well, we have seen more renewable Bitcoin mining. They haven't turned payments back on. So certainly, I think remains to be seen how much they'd integrate Bitcoin. And third parties have a challenging time, and we'll get into the big, beautiful bill next. But I think, as, you know, as Lynn Alden says, nothing stops this train. And we saw from either side, there's going to continue to be money printing, continue to be an expansion on a fiscal side. And as you said, Trey, Elon running into a brick wall, the limited impact Doge was able to make, or they really dug in and I think found a lot early on, but we saw that even with those potentially hundreds of billions of gains, it's still dropping the bucket to the trillions in debt that we're facing as a country.
Yeah, all the same things were said about Elon and that group of people in Vivek Ramaswamy about, like, oh, if anybody's going to be able to do it, these are the guys, right? Like, this is the guy you want in charge of eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government. And he just got basically nowhere. I mean, there was not even like a scratch or a dent on the surface. There was a whole lot of like hoopla, as you're referring to, up front. A lot of that seemed to be inflated. And the overall impact of all of this is that they just passed a bill that raises the debt ceiling by $5 trillion, which we all know the debt ceiling is kind of a facade and, you know, not actually meaningful in any like real way anyway. So that was always going to be raised. But it is a pretty big symbol of exactly just how unstoppable that train actually is. You know, Josh, what do you think? Like, do you think that they're going to make any meaningful impact with the America Party? Do you think that like Bitcoin is going to continue to be roped into these political conversations that we're having? I mean, it definitely seems like there's an in everywhere for Bitcoin as part of the conversation.
The short answer is no, I don't think the American Party or the America Party will go anywhere. But that said, I think that Elon is smarter now about how much the government relies on status quo than he was before. I think a lot of us who maybe were a little more optimistic are or a little wiser. So we'll see what happens. I think that there's some potential for sure as far as getting maybe a few people in. I wonder, for instance, if Thomas Massie will get connected with Elon. It seems like you know, depending on who you are in the Republican Party, Thomas Massie seems to always be on the outside. I think he's one of the most valuable members of Congress that we have. But I can see someone like him or in kind of a similar situation where you're a little bit on the outside, being interested in kind of teaming up with Elon potentially to hopefully bring some more fiscal conservatism into the government. I don't know if that will happen or not. It also seems like Elon has the opportunity to incorporate Bitcoin into a variety of different things that he's involved with. And he has at times, but not ever to the level where he really could have. So it does seem like if he is talking about Bitcoin, it might just be lip service and not anything that meaningful. So
he doesn't really talk about it, right? Like, it was a surprise to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, over the past week or yesterday or whenever it was, he's talking about fiat is hopeless in response mm-hmm. to a question about Bitcoin. But there's been no mention of Bitcoin basically at all from him since back in 2020 or whenever it was that he first adopted it as part of Tesla's balance sheet. And so, you know, it's really like so confounding to me. I don't really understand it. I really don't.
Right. Is it just trolling with Dogecoin? Like it's ridiculous.
Yeah. There's some kind of strange thing. Like I said, he's got an opinion about literally everything. But except for Bitcoin.
If there were an opportunity to really start a strong third party, it would be essentially the Orange Party, right? People who are Bitcoiners and who care more about sound money and the good that they believe that will bring to the world. And it seems like if you want to create a third party, that's the way to go. So I think Elon might see that and he might start, you know, saying pro-Bitcoin things. But to your point, he hasn't been talking about it. Moving forward, if he does, yeah, can you trust it or not? Is he just trying to get a conversation going? Is he just trolling? And that's a difficult thing about Elon Musk. You don't actually know what he thinks or what he believes, what he actually wants to do. Is he saying something meaningful or is he just trying to get clicks and get people riled up?
Yeah, there's definitely a strong precedent that was set in this last election with Trump being elected with like kind of largely putting him over the edge by embracing Bitcoin and crypto more broadly and getting all of this upswell of support coming from this group of passionate people like us who are, you know, kind of willing to support anybody who is going to embrace Bitcoin and the world that it represents. So if he is smart about doing this, you would think that he would embrace it. But there's like technical and procedural issues to a new party, any party, even if it is led by Elon Musk, to making any kind of progress. Like you have to go state by state and get on the ballot. Just getting on the ballot costs hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever, and all kinds of political lobbying. And there's all kinds of procedural ways that the Democrats and Republicans can stop that from happening. I've got a buddy, Brian Jacoteau, who's a election attorney. So I'd be curious to hear his thoughts on that. We should maybe bring him on to talk about it at some point, but it's definitely going to be an uphill battle for Elon. And I think he's going to come out with another metaphorical black eye to go along with the one that he actually got. Who knows where that came from? To go along with like the Doge black eye that he already walked away with. And he's going to get even more jaded. And then who knows where it goes from there.
Yep. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out. Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at veluscommerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. Well, so John, just a second ago, you talked about the big, beautiful bill, or maybe the better term is the alleged big, beautiful bill. We were hopeful for a brief moment in time that it would strip away capital gains taxes for smaller purchases with Bitcoin. That didn't end up happening. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on the big, beautiful bill and anything else maybe that I'm missing, because I wasn't paying too much attention to it in the last few days. You know, so much was changing all the time with it. Is there anything positive for Bitcoin in there? Should we hope that positive things come from the government when it comes to Bitcoin? A lot of people have been hopeful about the legislative changes that are more positive for Bitcoin, but it seems like we've kind of hit a wall, at least in recent days, as far as what the government's willing to do connected to Bitcoin. So any thoughts? Am I missing anything from the big, beautiful bill, or was it a wash for Bitcoiners?
I think even having the capital gains discussion on Bitcoin being part of the conversation is really important. It's something Bitcoiners have talked about for years, and I think is still a key friction point for many people when it comes to spending their Bitcoin in the US or as an American, you know, anywhere. So they introduced that the bill, which would, for any transactions up to $600, be capital gains tax free up to $5,000 a year, At some point, they lowered that to $300, and then it fully got scrapped at the end, the final discussions. Cynthia Lummis has now resubmitted that bill with the $300 mark. And as we've seen, any other bill outside of single large bills have difficulty getting passed. So, you know, I think that it'd probably be a few years until this is seriously revisited. But the fact that it was on the table, again, that senators, representatives in the House are hearing this as a key talking point in the crunch time of a bill being passed when they're really paying attention, I think is really important, you know, movement of that Overton window even further. Something actually positive on the health side for our business at Sound HSA are some of the expansions around health savings accounts, actually. So you're able to, you're seeing an expansion now. You compare those with bronze or catastrophic ACA plans. You can spend your, even more importantly, your HSA or health savings directly with direct primary care providers, which for some reason hadn't been allowed before, as well as extending some COVID provisions around being able to spend it on telehealth directly too. So I think, you know, there's a lot in the bill, of course, 900 pages. It's going to add to the deficit. It's going to add, and for Bitcoiners, just the underlying of really having to monetize the debt as a country. A lot in there to unpack, but I think, again, the de minimis transactions, if anything, it's not enough, right? I think as Bitcoiners, though, we should still be pushing for a full Bitcoin as money. It's valid currency around the world, and there shouldn't be any capital gains tax. We're not having capital gains tax when we go to Europe and we're going in and out of the euro. And as we've seen, the dollar's having its worst year in decades. But even still, we're not getting to write off a capital loss on our transactions that we make in other currencies. So I think Bitcoin should really be treated as money, and something we're going to try to do on the healthcare side, at least, where within the HSA, for example, you don't have capital gains tax. Being able to create more of that circular economy for Bitcoin and healthcare is one example where you don't have that friction point. But overall, the bill just adds to the deficit. And the train's left the station for sure. What do you think, Trey?
Yeah, I'm going to start off with positive, right? Because I feel like I come across negative sometimes. It's very positive that this discussion is even being had. It's a testament to the fact that we've got people in positions of power that actually care about the issues that we Bitcoiners care about. I agree with you. It should be treated the same as other currencies. But at the same time, we have a lot of people advocating that Bitcoin is not a currency, that it's just a store of value, that's just an asset, and that we shouldn't even think about it as a currency, even though it can operate in both arenas simultaneously. So I'm not surprised to see it be stripped out. I was cautiously optimistic, thinking, oh yeah, maybe this thing will sneak in along with the other pork or whatever that's out there that's going into this massive thing. But it didn't happen. I agree with you that, you know, it has a much lower chance of being passed as a standalone bill, because, you know, you can get more broad support if everybody's getting their pork, you know, included, or their special issues included into a big omnibus bill like this. But as soon as you start carving out an issue that only certain people care about, it's very difficult to garner the support for that particular piece, which is why we end up in this situation where you get these big bills. I never saw an answer, and probably should have done a little bit more research to figure this out, but do you guys know if that $600 that was being proposed, or what dropped to $300, was inflation adjusted at all, or was it just a hard dollar amount? Because obviously we've been burned over and over again in the past from other types of like dollar denominated fixed amounts that turn out to, you know, come back to bite us as the inevitable debasement of the dollar, you know, continues on decade after decade. Right. Did you guys see anything about that?
Well, so what I'll say is I don't know if that's changed. I've heard that 600 number for some years. So, I mean, obviously that'll be $600 of Bitcoin today in 5 years is going to be a whole lot different. But I imagine they're just thinking in dollar denominated terms. I don't know if the de minimis rules, like if they ramp up that amount over time or not.
Yeah, I don't think it was being inflation.
I'm guessing it's just 600 in perpetuity or 300.
Even if you're just thinking about it in like normal dollar denominated inflation adjusted terms, okay, whatever CPI is on a yearly basis, say it's 3%, which is where around about where it's been now. So, you know, starting in year one, $600 exemption, then in year two, it's $600 plus 3% or whatever, right? Like that should be anchored to something like CPI at the very least, if you're at all serious about what the essence of the bill is supposed to be. But you know, it's similar to these, you know, BSA or, you know, other like compliance oriented or, you know, regulatory numbers that where we have to like disclose information about putting money into a bank account or whatever the case is, or withdrawing cash. And they're anchored to dollar numbers that, you know, used to be about $70,000 in 1971 or whenever it was passed. And now it's still at, you know, anchored at $10,000, which buys a lot less than what it used to, right?
The real win would be getting it in sats. You know, I'd love a 300,000 sats or less, no taxes on it. That would be a major win.
That would be really cool.
Then we would grow.
Nobody understands sats.
We can buy more and more over time. Yeah, I think being anchored in sats as a unit of account is definitely the next step, maybe in the next bill. Who knows? I don't think it's in the current bill. But yeah, I think when you consider that Bank Secrecy Act you're referring to, and now $10,000, okay, if you're traveling another country, you're supposed to disclose and so on, becomes more and more cumbersome for individuals, businesses, absolutely from a regulatory perspective. And we know the debasement is going to continue. So we'll continue to, I think, see how that bill progresses, or at least the conversation around it. I know there's some other kind of initial report cards due here in a couple weeks in July around what the initial crypto task force was set out to do. So we'll continue to hear more and more, I think, of Bitcoin and digital assets more broadly coming out of the White House and in DC.
Yeah, look, maybe it's just our echo chamber, but it does feel like Bitcoin is part of the conversation in a lot more realms, or it's at least it's like when it's injected into the conversation, people don't just automatically reject its relevance to the situation. And you'll see a lot more of that as there's more adoption and more people hold it and more people are thinking about it. But, you know, I'm still continuing to be surprised just by how the price just hasn't gotten out and running yet, you know, just based off of all of the actual bullishness that's happening, right? Like we know for a fact that we're at least adding $5 trillion to the national debt. That's like over, you know, what's the national debt at now? 37 trillion. Mm-hmm. So we're adding $5 trillion to that until we hit the next debt ceiling. We'll probably get there in, you know, what, 3 years or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know how long
this is supposed to last.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's at the very least, if you just look at the national debt as a measurement of dollar debasement, which is, I think that's an interesting proxy, you're at least looking at, you know, this like 15% type of a number of debasement that is just guaranteed to be happening over the next couple of years.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So on a more positive note recently, I guess this would be the FHA. I forget who exactly was saying this, but the FHA head, whoever it is, was saying that you can now, or maybe now or soon, I'm not sure which it is, consider Bitcoin as part of your total assets whenever you're applying for a mortgage. It once again adds credibility to Bitcoin, as this is an asset that people, that the government considers worth considering when it comes to your mortgage. So I think it's a pretty cool thing. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on it. I'll also be interested to know if it actually affects, you know, who can buy a home. But any thoughts on this, or, you know, reflections from looking at some of these changes?
I'm going to take a very small victory lap on this one, just because it was like two or three episodes that we did ago, and it was like just before that announcement came. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest policy of bank adoption will come when they just start offering credit based off of Bitcoin being included in the asset base that you are that you're disclosing to them. Mm-hmm. That is collateralized. So it's not like they're doing loans that are directly backed by Bitcoin or something like that. But just the fact that they're acknowledging this as an actual asset that is on people's personal balance sheets to get a mortgage is a huge, huge win. Because think about all of the process that needs to be in place for them to do that, right? Like they've got to have some way of verifying that. They've got to have some way of just putting that in their paperwork. It requires some education from the underwriter standpoint as to what this is and how to value it, and you know, what the market structure looks like. The pronouncement was about crypto at large, but, you know, really the only thing that is viable in this scenario is Bitcoin, because it's the only thing that actually has any staying power or depth in terms of liquidity, such that, like, from an underwriter standpoint, the most important thing is like, okay, what assets do you have to liquidate in the event that you lose your job and you can no longer actually service this loan, right? That's essentially what it is. It is a secondary consideration for loan mm-hmm. Applications or mortgage applications. So just keep that in mind, that like what they're underwriting is your ability to service that loan. And that the primary thing that people, that banks are looking at, or mortgage lenders are looking at, is your income or your ability to provide some type of cash flow to cover the interest payment and the principal payment on that loan. The asset value piece of this is secondary, but it's still an important piece of this. And so it just like starting to creep its way in to these institutions that control a lot of capital, that control a lot of the credit infrastructure. And part of that process is that these people that are around that procedure for initiating a mortgage, they now have to understand Bitcoin a little bit better. And that goes into their psyche. And now they're like, oh, well, maybe this thing is more has more staying power than I thought. And maybe I'll pick up a little bit on my own, you know, just for their personal balance sheet. So this is how adoption happens, mm-hmm. just a little bit at a time, a little bit under the radar. And we end up in a situation where Bitcoin is just ubiquitous.
Yeah, I agree. I think this can't be overstated. It's a massive, massive win for Bitcoiners in the U.S. Credit to Bill Pulte and the Federal Housing Association. And really to see the speed and the engagement that they had on X was really interesting. And the feedback they're getting from Bitcoiners, they got this, they raised it, and got the letter signed relatively quickly. And yeah, we've spoken about this on previous shows. And I think having Bitcoin recognized in your personal balance sheet when you go to get a mortgage really opens up your optionality as an individual. You don't have to necessarily sell your Bitcoin right now to get the liquidity to even show that you can get a mortgage, right? And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are backing or buying essentially like half of all mortgages that come out. I mean, this is the U.S. government backstopping a lot of these loans that are being written, which of course is part of the money printing process. When a home is sold and you write a mortgage, they're creating new money as a bank to pay the seller, right? Ultimately, right? And so having Bitcoin recognized as part of that equation, I think, again, just gives more power to Bitcoiners in deciding when and how they utilize their Bitcoin to improve their life, you know, your life into the future. And so whether that's enabling a purchase that wouldn't have been enabled at all and having that primary dwelling place, I think you have a massive monetary premium placed on homes right now in certain places around the country. Prices are falling a little bit, but particularly we're in hotter areas or where there's just no inventory or zoning considerations, there's not enough supply that's being built. And when you have an average housing price, 7 times average income, when it used to be 2 or 3, there's just more and more difficulty for younger people in being able to get a home. So for Bitcoiners now, knowing that, hey, if I'm stacking Bitcoin, I'm saving in Bitcoin when the time comes to go get a mortgage, this will be used as part of that equation alongside other investments, really legitimizes Bitcoin. And I think further incentivizes people to take a look at Bitcoin as being an option for just personal holdings and a benefit it can have of ultimately getting some credit based on that Bitcoin that you have.
Yeah. If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners.
Yeah, you're kind of touching on a tangential point that I want to make and been thinking about recently, which is that as Bitcoin grows and as the value of it increases, Bitcoin holders like us who have been around for a while, the people who are coming into the space, who are building their Bitcoin balance sheet for themselves and for their businesses and all that, several years from now, like, we end up in a very strong economic position such that we are going to have a lot more purchasing power for the actual real goods and businesses and assets around the economy. And I hosted this panel at Bitcoin 2025 on Bitcoin and financial independence, retire early, and all that. And Brian Harrington was one of the panelists there. And he made a point that I kind of joked about as part of the panel, that he was basically saying, look, Bitcoiners should buy real estate. We should buy businesses. We should own these assets, because if we don't, then the people who don't own Bitcoin, who don't believe in it, will. Mm-hmm. And it kind of like leaves all of that to the fiat maxis, so to speak. And I laughed that off and I was like, oh, so buying real estate is a moral argument now, you know, and all that. But it actually stuck with me. And I've been thinking a little bit more about this, that he might be right there, right? Like, it's actually important for us to, obviously, we're going to recognize the opportunity cost of owning anything other than Bitcoin. And there's an economic calculation that we all go through as Bitcoiners once you understand what that opportunity cost is of not owning Bitcoin in favor of something else. But at the same time, he's right. Like, and at some point in the future, we will have the economic powerhouses on our side that can own all these other assets that actually control things in meat space. And we should be people, like the people with our value sets, the people who understand the promise that Bitcoin brings to the world, like, we're all going to be better served if we actually own all these assets. So my message to Bitcoiners out there is, be thinking about this in the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever. There will be another big crisis, another big opportunity for Bitcoiners who have accumulated all this purchasing power to come in and start scooping up some of these distressed assets that other people are kind of forced to sell because they're financing them with so much leverage that mm-hmm. they have to cover that. They have to sell it down. We should actually make sure that we're mentally, psychologically in a position to scoop those things up, even if it means parting with some portion of our stack, because we need to start balancing out the ownership of assets across the economy and getting more and more Bitcoiners in positions where they control the means of production, so to speak.
Yep. Yeah. And so I think that Bitcoin, just holding it, is 100% a valid use case. At the same time, there's a certain point where you might want to think about moving away from just accumulating and beginning to build with it. And to that end, the last episode of the podcast was with Wyatt O'Rourke, and he is, I think, the CMO at The Space in Denver. We didn't talk too much about
Got
the space
book
in,
right here.
Perfect. Boom. So we talked about the Bitcoinization of finance. We talked about that on the podcast. We didn't talk about the space too much. We did talk in a bonus episode a little bit about urbanism, but it's something to consider. Brian's been a voice on this, Bobby Shell from Voltage as well. And I think there'll be a lot more people talking about, whether it's business or, you know, some people are talking about thinking about how to build, you know, Bitcoin urbanism, building structures that raise the human spirit and that last for generations. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in the future for Bitcoiners as their wealth increases, because they've held Bitcoin and benefited from that for so long. But then it's like, once you've held it, what can you do to build with it and build a world that reflects hard money values and lasting values?
Mm-hmm. And we're going to want to, and there's goods and services we're going to need, right? And so I think as the population demographics in the US, you know, we have a larger boomer population that's aging, that's looking to, you know, sell their businesses. They want to retire. Maybe they don't have kids to hand it off to, or their kids are doing something else. There's certainly opportunities out there. I think if you're, you know, to that SMB point, small, medium-sized businesses, that Bitcoiners can go out there, cash flowing businesses where you can get some sats flow, serve your local community. And rather than those types of businesses being bought up by private equity or larger entities, and certainly we've seen this trend play out massively in healthcare, where you have a ton of M&A and smaller numbers of independent providers and practices out there getting bought up, and bigger health systems and worse service, worse quality playing out. The more we have Bitcoin doctors or Bitcoin business owners in general providing different needs, I think that, definitely to your point, Trey, is going to continue to play a bigger and bigger role. And having that primary dwelling space is the part of the American dream, and being able to attain that, I think, through and via Bitcoin over the next few years as we move into the, now we're actually closer to 2050 than we are to 2000. So, you know, moving to in the back half of this decade too, it's just going to be, I think, more and more clear. So people are hopefully going to be waking up and learning and studying Bitcoin, or at least listening to some podcasts and start reading all the material that have accumulated now, particularly over the last half decade, I think, you know, since COVID and really that money printing. So, you know, we'll see what the next number is and how many trillions get added. But it's getting to the point, and already is at the point, or numbers that we have a hard time comprehending as humans. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So we say trillion.
Feels like the only people, the way real estate is going, like for primary residences, the only people who are going to be able to afford their first home are like young people who own Bitcoin already. I mean, it might actually play out that way, and for large swaths of the population, where it's like, oh, this thing is like totally out of reach for me now. I'm still living in my parents' basement when I'm 35. But look at my buddy who bought Bitcoin 10 years ago, and he's got this nice, you know, single family home with the yard and everything that I'm looking to get to, and just can't. You know, that's exactly kind of like the path that I'm talking about, and it's definitely going to be fun, or maybe not fun if it causes some animosity, to watch all that play out.
Yeah, and one last piece about the bill. They did say you need to have, you know, your cryptocurrency, or Bitcoin in our case, you know, on a centralized exchange in order for them to recognize it. And I think with the stepping stones, you know, it makes sense. Obviously, hopefully we get to a point where they, as the FHA, have confidence in verifying, maybe using Hoseki or other kind of proof of reserves at an individual level and signing your own keys and showing, maybe working, you know, with an institution like Unchained and saying, this is my Bitcoin here held in collaborative custody, should be counted as well, versus having to send it to an exchange and have it recognized. But it doesn't need to sit on exchange necessarily from, you know, for the duration of the loan. But just to the point, there'll still be ways to improve even this announcement, but I think is really a step in the right direction.
So the last thing, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. There's an article from CNBC that said, I think it was for the third quarter, that corporations have accumulated more Bitcoin than the ETFs. I'm curious to know if you guys think this will be a continual trend. Will corporations for the next, you know, 30 quarters be accumulating more Bitcoin than the ETFs? Or do you feel like retail will catch up? And once again, you know, obviously we're talking about the ETFs as opposed to spot Bitcoin. So like you just buying and holding it, whether it's on a centralized exchange like we just talked about or in cold storage. Do you think that corporations will continuously beat out retail moving forward?
I think corporations sit at a privileged position in terms of their access to capital, mm-hmm. using the capital markets. So they can add leverage and therefore bring purchasing power into the present where individuals are not able to do that. I think the majority of this corporations buying Bitcoin is just coming from Bitcoiners who are starting corporations or mm-hmm. SPACing into corporations to buy Bitcoin. So I don't know that really represents like the true adoption that we're all hoping to see on the corporate front. And, you know, in my mind, there probably is some kind of upward limit to how far out of our bubble that can actually expand. So like it remains to be seen as to whether or not we see more organic adoption of Bitcoin onto corporate balance sheets in the way that I think we on this call all would like to see it, which is that half the S&P 500 has some portion of Bitcoin as part of a like primary treasury reserve asset, or maybe just a secondary treasury reserve asset. It's like some portion of their cash holdings is held, you know, as like a long duration view with Bitcoin. And, but then they're carrying on their business and they're still trying to grow and add to their retained earnings, some portion of which then goes back into Bitcoin. That's what we really want to see. And I think over time, like that, that flywheel or that snowball continues to roll downhill and picks up more momentum. And it does become, you know, easier for corporations to buy larger amounts of Bitcoin. But I don't know how long like the Bitcoin treasury company phenomenon is going to last, but I definitely think we're going to see some bodies floating by on that trend. And there is some kind of an upward limit, I think, to like the number of these things that can exist, especially in any given jurisdiction or market, but even across the world. We'll see. I don't know. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I agree. I think Lynn Alden wrote a great piece on this. I highly recommend everyone reading her July newsletter. But given Bitcoin's growth to this point and being a $2 trillion asset and being solidly there now for at least a couple months and quick monetization relatively over 16 years, Bitcoin's on the path that it should be if it is going to be adopted as global money that nation states and policymakers, as we've already talked about, but now businesses are getting interested and wanting to add it to their balance sheet. And we're actually seeing a lot of, for those traders and people out there that are seeking maybe higher volatility and higher short-term returns that they previously sought in altcoins or shitcoins in previous ICOs and in recent years, you're seeing a lot of that activity happening in the capital markets via Bitcoin treasury companies. And so it's just a sign as well, I think, where you haven't had an alt season that I think a lot of other, you know, more on the crypto side might have expected, as we've seen Bitcoin's price rise over the last 2 years. And a lot of that activity is happening with Bitcoin treasury companies. So I agree, there certainly could be the place where there's a deleveraging at some point, because it's hard to say exactly how much leverage these companies are taking on is a varying degree in individual or companies that have now more access to investing in stocks than they did in getting into altcoins. Definitely haven't hit its peak yet. But to your point, Trey, on more organic, that where that feels maybe inorganic, where Bitcoiners jumping in and just doing the thing, there definitely has been some organic, I think, Bitcoin adoption from solid companies such as Figma, for example, which offers great software tools for UX and design. In their S1 filing, looking to go public, have bought $70 million of a Bitcoin ETF too, which is notable now that we're a year and a half into the ETFs. It made that easy for them to buy Bitcoin with a possible allocation of another $30 million into Bitcoin as well. So I think those types of headlines to me really strike a chord, because it's a company that's just building, growing, scaling, serving a really important use for startups. and other companies that have recognized the importance of just adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. They don't even make a big deal about it. But as they go public, I think that makes them that much more attractive and would put them on those, you know, those rankings of Bitcoin treasury companies.
Yeah, we'll still see these like kind of strong leaders of companies that just get orange pilled and decide to start stacking Bitcoin personally. And then for their company, like I know one in particular that I'm thinking of that is looking to go public later this year, is a very successful commercial, like serves commercial grade type customers and has like, you know, $100 million a year in revenue and is just a very profitable high growth company. And the CEO is just fully down the rabbit hole, orange pilled, has his own personal stack and is stacking for the business. Mm-hmm. And he's looking to, you know, take advantage of the opportunity, the arbitrage that exists in the capital markets by taking his company public so that he can stack more sats there. So that is a very, like, that is the story that I love hearing, right? Because it is very much organic. It's very much a, hey, we've got a business in the real world that provides real services that is actually profitable, and we're adopting Bitcoin, and we're going to arbitrage the capital markets to, like, you know, amplify the speculative attack that we can on the dollar. Those are the stories that I love hearing. And it's going to be fun to watch that when it comes to light and comes to market.
Absolutely. Well, another thing people might love hearing is where to hear more from each of you. So if you don't mind, guys, sharing where people can go to keep up with your work.
Yeah, you can follow me on X at @TS_HODL. And my newsletter is FireBTC, firebtc.substack.com. Go give it a read and subscribe for free.
Yeah, and you can follow me on X and Oster @TheBitcoinYogi. You can check out some of my consulting work at satoshihealth.com. And if you're interested in Bitcoin HSA, check out soundhsa.com and see what we've got in the works. Excited to connect with you all.
Great. Thank you guys for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, good conversation.
Thanks, guys.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Bitcoin Playbook. If you want to reach out to either me, Trey, or John, you can find those links down in the show notes. And be sure to check out both Sound HSA and the Fire BTC Substack. As always, keep building, keep growing. Until next time, keep living and leading.